Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. One of the most common questions that people ask these days can be summed up with one word: why? Why did this happen? Why am I here? Why? Today, Lincoln Steed, editor of Liberty Magazines, answers those questions in the light of religious liberty. Liberty Magazine is the sponsor of this program. Lincoln, what's on your heart today and why?
Well, I want to talk about myself a little bit.
Good.
My wife's not here, so I can get away with it. After 22 years editing Liberty Magazine, just allow me for a moment to think about me.
Yes.
I went on a drive recently, actually, to the TV studio to do some programs that I do regularly. And along the way, I listened to a 7-CD set by Gore Vidal on a moral level. You know, it's frightening how he ordered his life. I can't endorse that whatsoever. But I've always appreciated his sharp mind and insightful way of looking at society. And for the first time, I heard his life story. And since I've heard it, I realize now he always talks about it, but I've missed it in the past. And his grandfather was a blind senator. And Gore Vidal essentially grew up as the son of his grandfather because his mother was rather dysfunctional and went through several husbands. And so he lived with the grandfather, and being blind and an educated person, he needed someone to read to him. And Gore said that he spent many, if not most, of the hours in a typical day reading aloud to his grandfather all the great classics, all the philosophical books, and the Congressional Record that he said was quite dull. I think as a natural consequence, he became very articulate, very learned. And he said tellingly, which I can identify with, he said he was never a lonely child, but he was often alone, solitary. And when I look back on myself, I don't know what caused it in my life, but I was comfortable in my own company and, you know, I socialize a bit in grade and high school. But generally, I like to be alone, either wandering the woods or most particularly reading books. And I remember in grade school, I was always being disciplined for reading a book under the desk. I read innumerable books, and it gave me, together with traveling with my father who moved to the U.S. and we grew up in Australia, many countries as an exposure to different culture and then reading many great works of art, you have a different way of looking at the world. So when I was just barely out of my teens and we went to some other countries like Afghanistan, Iran, Pakistan, places that even today not quite bastions of freedom, I didn't just look at it in a tourist's eye. I looked at it from a philosophical, historic, theological point of view. And it made a deep impact on me. And I can remember as a young kid when the uprising in Hungary took place. I think I was only about 7. It stirred me mightily. It wasn't just news. I saw that here was history working out, people struggling. Only, a decade out of the Great World War when tens of millions of people died, but they were still ready to die for freedom. How important it was. I also had read deeply on things like Pilgrim's Progress and Fox's Book of Martyrs and Milton's Paradise Lost and on and on. And I knew how important through the ages the freedom principle of religion in particular has been for people. And it seems paradoxical. Freedom's so important you're willing to die for it. And not too many people nowadays sort of think that way. But, you know, at the end of the day, the principles and character is all that we have. In other words, intangibles, an idea is the most important thing, and the ideas drive the world. So when I look back on it, that prepped me for what I've done now for 22 years, because as far as Liberty Magazine, I never, ever expected to be editing a religious liberty journal. I never planned on working in the religious liberty field. It just sort of happened. And I can say providence, you know, God moves in a mysterious way as wonders to perform. And we're all subject to, I wouldn't say it's divine manipulation, but God's leading and hidden hand, which has been used in more nefarious descriptions of political activity. But God has a hidden hand. And as I said in an editorial that I shared recently, we're responsible for our own actions. And I don't believe that, by and large, God is puppeting human behavior. I believe in cause and effect, and God gives the rules and the guidance and expects us to follow that. But providence does open ways before us, and I'm so thankful that I could get into religious liberty, and I'm so thankful with this background that I think I can see it in a slightly different way. Because even in my own church, way too many of our religious liberty directors see it as a legal challenge. This amendment to this bill, or to stop this bill, or to lobby with this lawyer. All reasonable activities, but not central to what we're dealing with.
So what is it, Lincoln, that we are dealing with?
It's the world of ideas. It's a continuation of what Jesus said over and over again, and they generally didn't get him, proclaiming the kingdom of heaven, and he would keep saying, it's within you, it's within you. Mm-hmm. Obviously, one day, to be gloriously revealed as an eternal, literal kingdom that we could participate in. But in his ministry here, it was an idea that he was spreading. He wanted to open their mind to something. And if minds are open to the gospel first, but to religious liberty, you don't need so much legal maneuvering. Things happen more spontaneously, and not ironically, but gracefully, they happen in a more natural way. It's a real shift, not just a rearranging of the deck chairs or a change in the ruling order.
Boy, you know, you've just identified a real issue in the area of religious freedom around the world. You say that our spirituality needs to be in you or in us. A lot of people are saying, I'm standing up for the spirituality or the religion that's in my church, that's in my denomination. It's not in me, it's in my church, and I represent my church, and so I'm going to stand up for my church. You're saying they're missing the point.
Absolutely. Well, not only are they missing it, if that's pursued too vigorously, it produced the Inquisition.
Yes,
it produced the persecutions, not only of Catholics, but of Protestants. Because without the right spirit of religion, arguing for a carve-out for religious behavior is cruel. Yeah. It's pharisaical, it's cruel, and it's misbegotten.
So you discovered that it is in you, Lincoln Steed, in you, to spread the gospel, to use whatever media is available to you to accomplish that. Has it worked? Have you felt satisfied over the years that you've been able to do what is in you?
Well, I don't think any of us can be fully satisfied on any level. Life is a process, and I'm discovering, like you and some others, I think, as you get older, life's not enough. One of the poets, I think it was in Ulysses by Tennyson, he says, life piled on life is not enough. It seems long when you're 20, 70 or 80 is a far distant mountain.
Far distance, yeah.
But we're working towards something. And that's why all of the great stories of mankind and the great spiritual narratives have a journey, and you're traveling somewhere. And it's the journey of a life, and I like to think beyond that. But I'm sure of this principle that, certainly in the Christian gospel, it has to be internalized. And remember, I was actually joking to myself. I haven't had the guts to tell our group. You know, I deal with a group of about a dozen regional directors and a few others that are closely allied. And they're very close to the number of the apostles that Jesus had. And I was going to joke that it's been a little like dealing with that group before the upper room.
Oh, my.
You know, before the upper room, you know, who is the greatest in the kingdom?
Right, right.
This group rejected you, Lord. Let us bring fire down from heaven on them. And Jesus didn't have much time for that sort of a thing. But after they got the illumination in the upper room, nothing could stop them.
Yeah.
I've taken many sermons where I've pointed out that we still talk about the gospel commission, but we've not quite understood that it was fulfilled in a very real sense in one generation. You know, those 12 plus another, 50 or so, no more than a couple of hundred people took the gospel to the known world. India, some evidence even to England and so on. Basically, the entire cradle of civilization as it was then known, the Middle East, and actually then rather brutish Western Europe. So, you know, we're not waiting. And this has been my critique of my own church too often, and it's an automatic function of a bureaucracy. But they're always looking at a world map and checking off the countries where we're operating. And if we're there, then that's fulfilled and we can look elsewhere. That's not a very good way to decide when the gospel has gone to the whole world. It's when the whole world is lightened with the idea of the kingdom.
I like that.
And that's a whole different story.
It is. And speaking of that, Lincoln, you and I are both moving forward in our years. How do we put in them the young people of this world? How do we put in them what you felt when you were young and what you know is necessary for this ministry to succeed?
They need to catch the vision. It's not training per se, it's getting the vision. And I am not so old that I've forgotten what it's like to be young. Young are very idealistic.
Yes.
And so they need to catch a vision. Not necessarily Damascus Road thing, because I think with Paul, that was as much bad conscience as anything. You don't want a young person to develop bad conscience.
Right.
But to see that there are possibilities, they can sign up for the biggest endeavor of all time. Surely that's something that would encourage them. Unfortunately, whether it's the Adventist Church or most churches or even most political movements in our era, they haven't really caught the interest of the young people. There was a period back in the, I would say, 60s and 70s, when particularly revolutionary political movements attracted young people and some aspects of religion. I remember the Jesus movement very plain, which at the time I thought was sort of LSD and marijuana induced, but I believe God's spirit was moving on impressionable young people.
And I like to think, Lincoln, that one of the ways that we church leaders and church members can light that spark in young people is to let them do things. Let them be involved in the church service. Let them play their instruments and sing their songs and strum their guitars and make their speeches and play their skits. Let them be part of the movement. Am I right?
Yes. And again, looking at the ministry of Jesus within, obviously, tolerable limits, he was acting that way. He didn't restrict people. And thankfully, it was even said by, I think, Gamaliel, you know, don't criticize this work. If the Lord's with it, it'll flourish. And we should treat young people that way. If we can turn their enthusiasm for spiritual things, and in this case, for upholding religious freedom, so be it. And there's this great irony that many committed people of one religion or another don't always see, that it means that you have to defend and advance the ability of everyone to believe anything,
amen,
not just what you believe.
Amen.
And it's almost contradictory.
Yeah.
But I believe in so doing, it will attract people to what you have. No one's interested in a narrow view of religion. But the last thing I need to say, since we're talking about how we promote religion, we need to promote the dream on the religion, the vision, the heavenly aspect, and indeed at the end, Christ, not ourselves. And a lot of PR exercises are selling the church. Selling us, good people, good organization, join with us. That's just bad spirituality.
LibertyMagazine.org is the website. Liberty Magazine was the sponsor of this program. Lincoln Steed, thank you so much for sharing with us today. Appreciate it. And listener, until next time, this is Charles Mills, along with Lincoln Steed, inviting you to rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone. If you'd like more information about LifeQuest Liberty, call 443-391-7258 or email us through our website at libertymagazine.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of liberty burning in your heart today.